are we at? 16?
16?
16. It is going to be really funny when these really start stacking up and we'll be like two off because we're like, we don't want to throw that many out there. Then yeah, we'll have to correct it somewhere along the way.
Nah, we'll leave it in.
Okay, great.
Now that we're doing our own post, it's harder to fix things in post.
I was going to say that's not my fault, but it actually is my fault. So what I was thinking, Tom, is I'm going to very unfairly put something on you right now. Just come up with our intro for every episode. Go. You know how you say the same thing every time on a podcast when you're like, yes, yes, welcome. My name is so-and-so. My name is so-and-so. And we're here to deliver all things blah. And don't forget to like us and review us and rate us. And if there's anything you think you can tell us to make the show better, drop us a line at blah, 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 blah. And then you start talking.
And I have to do all that right now on the spot?
Yes.
Can I use an accent? No, we won't do that yet. We'll improv
the Italian
accents later.
One you were talking about earlier.
The Italiano. Welcome to Two Dads Talking. Thanks for tuning in. Doug and I appreciate you being here. I'm making this up ad hoc on the fly. That's kind of redundant. We can fix that in post. Yeah, this is what happens when Tom's dehydrated. He does a terrible job with the intro. But thanks for listening anyway. And let's just give this to Doug so he can do a better job.
No. We'll figure it out later. Slash. Yeah. You already know the drill if you're here at this point. We would probably get more traction with likes, ratings, reviews. Tell your friends. What I actually hope, and this is actually a sincere hope, Sir Thomas, Princess Thomas. I was thinking today that the most fun I could have at this point with this podcast is if we got enough listeners that we could have like a fan club. And not like a traditional fan club. You're not going to be all like Insane Clown Posse or you're not Justin Bieber or anything like that. It's basically just like a Facebook group of guys.
Why can't we
be
down with the clown? Why can't we have like a Malenko fan club? There's nothing wrong. Grant Malenko in the house would be great.
I mean, that would be cool, but like, have you met me?
That's fair.
But we should call ourselves Dad Buds instead of Dad Bods.
I'm not entirely sure that I have the words to express how much respect I just lost for you. Dad Buds?
Seven.
Dad Buds?
I believe the answer to everything is 42 or something.
I like the Douglas Adams reference. I'm good with that. Well, I'm getting all the references tonight. This is a rare night. I feel like father figures would be
a body
reference, but Dad Buds sounds like post-40 testosterone slipping and the boobs are coming in. That's what that feels like to me.
I thought you were going a different direction. I was like, wow, it's not that kind of podcast.
Nope, I wasn't going there, but thanks for letting me know where your head is at. Tonight, unfortunately, guys, we're going to try and keep this high and tight, like a ranger haircut. Been a long couple of days of not feeling well and being pretty dehydrated. So I'm going to try not to go on for an hour and a half tonight. We're going to see how we do. We're going to fail, by the way. We're going to fail. We're not going to make that deadline.
Yeah, we probably will. As long as the words Tom and Brady don't show up anymore.
Oh, you want to talk about Tom Brady tonight? We can do that.
It's less talking and more unraveling, I think, when that happens. So those of you listening may know, we recently had our third child. And he's just now not the like blind, blubbering mess. Now he's kind of the looks around, sees you, gets pissed at you, and makes like the best rage face kind of mess. Where I'm ultimately going with this was our daughters wanted to watch that Inside Out movie again. We watched that about a week or two ago. And having an infant while watching that movie was really amazing. It actually makes me think the people that made the movie really, really, really thought it through, because again, random, but when I first saw the movie and Joy shows up and she makes a joke about how it was wonderful, it was just me and Riley for like 32 seconds, and then sadness showed up. But there's the single button. If you remember, it's just a dark room, and that first happy memory, it lights up the room in the gears. But watching it now, it doesn't just light up the room. You kind of see some of them form as the memory kind of goes. So it kind of has a path, but it's not actually, not all of it's there until that first memory hits in. And having an infant around and seeing it again and knowing what they did with the rest of the movie, I think they did that on purpose too. And I completely missed it the first time. Like, I thought it was just dramatic, revealing stuff. But I think their theory is when you're a literal baby, there's just about nothing there. You just have a little button and a little emotion, and things literally grow out of that. It's pretty true, I think, because this kid doesn't have any reference and he's crying up a shitstorm. And I'm sitting there thinking, you know, as an adult right now, if I shit my pants and was hungry and couldn't see farther than like 2 feet, and then someone ripped off my pants and cold air blasted me, and I'm still hungry and I'm just being thrown around places, I'd be crying right now.
Yeah. Kind of watching a visual representation of how neural synapses are connecting and mm-hmm. creating something more. And the first time I watched it, I was like, eh, big deal. It was fun to watch with my kids. It wasn't something that stood out to me as a great movie. And then the second time I watched it, it was like, oh, that was actually a solid kids flick. There's some kids movies that you watch as a parent and you're like, yeah, I just watched that to watch with my kids. It's not something I'm ever going to watch with them again if I can help it. It's just a filler kids movie. And there's some of them, and that's one of them, that you watch it and you're like, oh, there's more here for me if I really look at this a second time, if I watch it with them again. That was a good flick. It was neat. But I remember thinking about it the second time, and I was like, oh, this is like synapses firing and forming lasting memories and lasting thought processes and emotions. And it's kind of neat.
And there's a lot, like with the HQ characters are all the emotions. So they're the ones, and this is true for most people, they're the ones driving the ship and making the high-level decisions. Then you have your long-term memory workers and your dream workers and all that, that kind of have a specific job, and they don't have a lot of leeway in their decision-making the way the emotions do. And then add on stuff like the train of thought. They say little things like, ugh, you never know where that thing's going to pop up or where it's going to be. Even the emotions don't know where the train of thought's going, but there is a station next to abstract thought, like right on the other side of abstract thought, and it always swings by HQ at least once a day. So like they really thought it through. Other than, you know, the Canadian imaginary boyfriend who would die for Riley. It was just, you know, little things like that too. You watch him again now with like a 5-year-old in school who talks about this one boy in her class all the time, and he's like her bestie, and now I see, you know, I would die for Riley, and I'm just imagining like, oh yeah, well, hopefully you'll die for my kid too when you get older. Bucko.
Yeah, we're at that stage with my oldest right now. She comes home talking about boys and one boy in particular, and yeah, we're already there. It's all right. I've got plenty of land here, plenty of room for bodies back in the woods. It's
plenty fine. Of land, plenty of not things to hide behind coming up to the house.
I've got lots and lots of woods behind my house, something like 8 acres or 11 acres of woods behind my house. It's fine.
You should dig if you don't have one already, excuse me, I should have been clear. If you don't have something already, you should dig like a well in the back, like in the woods somewhere. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, have him help you with something in the back and be like, oh yeah, that's the old well. I think someone fell in there a little bit ago. And then just walk on, just to like mess with them. The reason I thought of this was because one of my buddies, he and his wife bought a place north of us in where there's lots more land. They bought like an acre and a half, and he was telling me that there's this old well in the woods in the back, and it has an old like concrete top on it. It probably literally was like an old rain well that just never got taken care of, but he was talking about how he just hadn't done anything with it yet, because why would he? He's got other stuff to work around the house. And I was like, you know what, next time we're here, we should just go open it. And both of our wives are like, no. Yes, I understand that I'm going to release the like demon and then like three of us will die and we'll have to find the book or whatever. But like, come on, you're just going to sit there and be like, and then we didn't open it. Like, that's your story.
No good quest ever started by not opening the box. That's just not how any good quest ever started. Go talk to Pandora. She'll tell you.
And I've already thoroughly psychoanalyzed this too. In any of those, especially like the serial killer type of stories or the hunter stories where you have, just to ballpark it, you have like 6 or 7 people that are all being stalked by the killer. Whether or not the killer is one of the 6 or 7, I have decided that I will die third.
Okay.
I will not make it to the end. And it's because I have a little bit of that leadership role. And it's not leadership like, I'm going to get us all out of here safely. It's kind of like, well, someone has to open the door. Or someone has to pull the string. And at some point, like if someone else is like, let's go, I'll be like, okay, man, good luck. I'm right behind you in a situation like that. But then he dies first because he's the like leader that gets himself into trouble to a fault. Yeah. And then I'm sitting there like, okay, well, I guess I'll do it. And that's the third one. Then everyone screams and runs off. And then he picks off one more. And then that last person or two end up winning. Yeah. Or the movie never gets made because we all died.
I'm going to try to be the guy that wins. That's just kind of where I want to be. That's where I'm going to try to put myself.
Boring. Such a cliche answer, Tom. Oh, it I want to survive.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of what they teach you in law enforcement and the army and middle school education. It's kind of what they teach you. You survive it. That's funny, your thing with the well and, you know, just tell them that there was a body buried in there to mess with them. Like, my brother.
We just went from Inside Out to murder mystery.
I mean, yeah, but there's probably more there than we should probably connect the dots on right now. There's probably some real dark conspiracy theories there. My brother, I mean, back in Disney
Epstein,
movies, right?
Epstein Pixar. Didn't kill himself.
I still honestly don't believe he did. I'm fully on that conspiracy theory that believes he did not kill himself.
We just found our topic for the night, but go do your thing. I have a completely different theory that I have not heard from anybody else, but do your thing. Do your boring, I like survived new the apocalypse thing.
This is messing with my younger brother thing. This is a big brother messing with his younger brother thing. So 2009-ish, 2010-ish, my brother rents a house in Connecticut. It's on the edge of this buffalo farm. It's him and his then girlfriend and his best friend from college and poker. They decide to rent a house together. So there's this really big house on the edge of this buffalo farm. The guy who owns the house also owns the buffalo farm. And suddenly it becomes available and my brother and his friends, his girlfriend, let's rent this place out. And they get the house. Big, spacious place. It's got this big, beautiful deck that overlooks this gorgeous pond. And there's like electrical wires and electrical fencing that runs around one side of it that kind of borders the buffalo farm to keep them off the property. But beautiful, beautiful property way back in the Connecticut countryside. Just absolutely stunning. What you would think of when you think of a Yeats poem or maybe that's not the right poet, but when you think of one of those like classic country poets, this is what you think of.
Like Robert Frost and Mouse just ran
there
by.
You go. Robert Frost. Yeah. Perfect. So we're going up to see it for the first time. He's having a barbecue. Hey guys, come see the place. He's young. He's probably 23. So we're going to see the place. Before we go, I do a Google on the address. And one thing you have to know about me and my brother and our relationship is that I love to mess with him. Always in a nice way. But we grew up going to bed. We had bunk beds and we'd go to bed and I'd be telling him ghost stories every night to mess with him and try to scare him so bad he couldn't sleep. That was the goal every night. So in some form, that story still survives today. And then he'll tell you stories about things that there's a bridge in Mystic that I told him a ghost story about that I completely made up that still haunts him to this day. I think I was 9 when I did it and he was 4 and he still doesn't want to go over that bridge. He's like, Tom, I hate you for that. So I Google the address and I do kind of a deep Google and I find an obituary of a woman who died there relatively recently. And in the obituary, it talks a lot about her. I get a lot of her background. So we show up to his house and I'm taking the tour and I'm feeling pretty well armed. I'm a storyteller. I've got information. What else do I need? Like, this is my jam. This is where I live. We're taking the tour and he's taking me around and we go through the main house and we go downstairs. It was a 2-level, like a big ranch is what it was. Big 2-level ranch building. We go downstairs where his bedroom is and his bedroom abuts the backyard and has like an open door that walks out in the backyard and looks out at the pond and it's just gorgeous. And we get down there and I went, why does this feel so familiar to me? This is so weird. He goes, what do you mean? It feels like I've been in this room before. He goes, that's kind of weird. I said, yeah, I've never been in this town before. It's weird that this feels this way. You know what? It was a dream. And now I think about it, I had a dream. And I think this was the room in my dream. He goes, really? What was your dream? And I was like, there was this woman, older Latina woman. She was, I don't know, like 80s, early 90s. Like she was old. And she wasn't doing well. And I think this was her bedroom. And she was in a lot of pain. And she was talking to me throughout the dream. And she was wearing a crucifix and she had rosary beads. And she was saying the prayers at one point and telling me that we needed to find salvation and it wasn't too late. And the whole dream, I was trying to decide if it was my subconscious talking to me and telling me I need to fix myself or if this was someone that I had maybe wronged and I had to reach out to. And I can picture her in my head. And I gave this description of this woman. And I said, yeah. And then like halfway through the dream, all of a sudden there was a fire and it started on that wall. And I know it started on that wall. And she got up and there was a lot of smoke in the room and she breathed a lot of the smoke in and she was running out. And I ran and opened the door for her and she went and ran out of the back door, but she ran into the pond and drowned. And I just remember I couldn't help her. I remember watching her drown. And the last thing I saw were like the rosary beads in her hand. And I remember feeling really bad. I couldn't help her. And I woke up. And he turns
You're a
like this.
Sick fucker.
Oh man, he turns this shade of pale that is just otherworldly. And he goes, "Oh, I found a box down here when we moved down of these old rosary beads, and there was an old crucifix, and there was another one on the wall. And I think he said his mom used to live down here, and he's Puerto Rican or something. He's definitely Latino. And it was perfect. I mean, I had him hook, line, and I went on and on. I had him convinced this woman died a horrible death, basically in this bedroom until she rushed out and drowned, and that now she's haunting the premises. It was beautiful, Doug. It was a work of art. Yeah, that was my version of your well story. Got my brother pretty good on that one.
Yeah, but at least a well isn't going to haunt me for being a dick.
Oh, it will if I tell the story.
I was going to say, I hope she does that. I hope she's like, oh, you know what? I didn't have anything against you, but now I'm going to ghost you for a while just for messing with your brother.
Well, in hindsight, I believe she died a very peaceful death in that house, I believe. I think she had
not
home
anymore.
Care.
And, now you're talking shit. You're slandering the dead. Yep.
That's all right. I'm pretty sure somebody was murdered on my property where we currently live. So it's probably going to happen at some point.
I think we should totally just go right past that sentence you just said and just not even explore it further. It doesn't sound interesting at all.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
It definitely doesn't beg any question or leave anything unanswered.
I've already told the story about the jerk who sold me the house. Items were found in the backyard, shallowly buried shortly after that incident that make me wonder.
Like shells?
Like, no, not shells. Oh, just items that I don't want to mention on a podcast, but things were buried, you know, like 8 inches down.
Things that the police haven't told the public.
Well, I'm hoping they find something, but yeah, I don't know. Pretty sure somebody was probably savagely murdered in my backyard. That's what I think.
It has to happen somewhere.
Yeah, as long as it doesn't happen again, it's fine. It's all good. Or at least not while.
Well, I was going to say, wait until after. I have such a sick mind, though. One time, I just had this realization. Like, I walked into a hotel years ago now. It was one of our family reunions, one of our big come around the country kind of things. 12 stories or 8 stories or whatever it is, full 360 around common area. There's like 1,000 rooms in here. And I just thought, wow, I wonder how many people have died here. Like, we're all walking in. Oh, we're tourists. Let's have some fun. Guaranteed there hasn't been at least a couple of deaths in here. Heart attack or something.
Yeah.
There's that many people in here every day. It has to happen. Whenever you see the staff, they look kind of like agitated and they're just walking around not talking. You see the manager pushing one of those laundry bins and you're like, he shouldn't normally do that, should he? Like, you know, it's probably in there.
I like the way your head works, the way your mind works.
Even if it's not now, the next time any of you are in a hotel and you see someone who looks like not cleaning staff pushing a laundry bin, you're going to look, or you're going to not look. You're going to look at him. He's going to be like, why is this person staring at me?
You're either going to look or intentionally not look. It's one of those two things.
Right. Let's get to it, though. I suddenly got really excited.
I can tell. Your camera got a little higher on the computer desk, on the laptop or whatever.
It got a little higher.
Yeah, like it lifted up or something. It was kind of weird.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah.
What was her name again? Are you here, Rosa?
All right, let's hear this story on Epstein.
So Epstein didn't kill himself, but he gone.
He gone.
He's gone. That's my theory. So feel free to correct me on any of this if you are any sort of versed in it. But what I've heard, the popular theory was that Epstein was an asset or at least some sort of plant by Mossad to compromise / get blackmail on our federal level employees through child sex or drugs or whatever. And that's what the parties were just a front to catch people in these illicit acts so that, I don't know, they just have some sort of collateral for international dealings of any kind or whatever. That's the trendy one. I think, so two things. People do like to say it, and I think it's worth saying every so often. Ghislaine Maxwell, however you pronounce her name, his proverbial right-hand man, she was convicted of running / managing / operating a sex trafficking ring. That was her conviction. And somehow we have not arrested or found a single client. It would seem that if you were to convict someone of operating a sex trafficking ring, you would need to have some proof of actual sex trafficking, because then the defense attorney could say, well, show me a client. You can't prove my client did anything wrong if they don't have a customer. You'd at least have a conspiracy charge. Like, they tried to operate a sex trafficking ring, but no one wanted to be any part of it because, you know, I don't know, the kids were ugly or something. It's real hard to get a strong conviction like that without having an established client list, having an established flow of money, like something to hang your hat on and say, yes, this is proof this really happened. If you really believe that it was an otherwise consistent trial. And then leading up to the trial too, I believe it was reported that she was supposedly being on some version of like some sort of house arrest or guard arrest on some like 20 plus acre place in like Vermont or New Hampshire or something way north and rural and secluded like that. And the idea was, I guess it's undisclosed. They can see you coming. No one can come get her. Let's pretend I was a fed who was trying to be good, because I'm assuming that a lot of them are not with this case. The justification for putting her in a place like that is international others would want to come take her, try to get information or flip her or whatever like that. So you can't just have a regular jail prison set up like you did for Epstein, because look at how well that worked out. But you just need to be able to see it coming, because she might have the kind of information that you send a special team of six guys in who don't exist from Russia or something like that. She might get that kind of attention, especially with Epstein gone. So you put her on a spot where you can actually mitigate actual tactics a little bit. But my actual theory is that because they also didn't televise her trial, they just had the court drawings and everything like that. And then they reported stuff out and then they said, well, she's convicted. She's going to jail for a while. I believe that Ghislaine Maxwell is the actual linchpin for those operations. She is the mastermind, and she was just posing as the manager or right-hand man. And Epstein was actually a front man. If needed, he was the fall guy. And he was rewarded very well for being the fall guy. I mean, he got to glad hand a bunch of powerful people. He got to, kind of like how some of our guys try to become president. You have the position, you have the power, you have the influence, you have the circle that you're a part of now. You get compensated very well as long as you just do your job. So I think when it started unraveling, sorry, Jeffrey, you knew this could happen when you signed up. So he's in the jail cell. He knows at that point he's probably going to be gone anyway. Maxwell is actually the mastermind behind it because, and again, this is just purely a gut feeling, but a lot of the photos that are out there of the two of them, he's smiling and glad-handing and trying to pose for the camera. She looks like she's doing something. And she's not acting like a head of security. She's acting like she's working. I just have this theory that she is actually the main focal point, the manager, the more powerful, more instrumental piece. And they did this trial. They didn't publicize it. They put her somewhere rural, not in prison, because in prison, you have other witnesses, potentially other prisoners who could testify to seeing her or whatever else. And I think she didn't actually go anywhere. I think that her deal is just, you feed us some intel or you help us manage a few things on the side. And as long as you don't show up in the public eye again, you get to live. That's my theory in a nutshell.
An interesting theory, but I wonder why it's mutually exclusive of the idea that Epstein didn't kill himself. Why does it disprove that Epstein didn't kill himself? Because I can see both things still being true. I can see your theory being correct. And also he was killed by someone else.
Oh, I should have clarified. I think Epstein's dead. I think he didn't hang himself. This is probably just me thinking too rationally, thinking like some version of moral, just, rational, for lack of better phrasing, truth-telling person. Like a liar is going to lie, so why would a liar do this part? But I've always been of the opinion that if you really want to sell a good lie, like Tom's ghost stories, there has to be elements of truth to it. And it's partly so that the people telling the lie can kind of believe it themselves, be convincing, whatever. But it also just makes it more believable if you have true things in there. So I think Epstein didn't kill himself, and I think Epstein is dead, and I think all of that stuff around that is true.
Okay.
And that was the magician's trick. Like, look over here, we're all wondering why he got killed, and oh, by the way, we're charging his little executive assistant over here, when really, we're just trying to shove her through the system and have some sort of record of what we did with her so no one questions it. But really, she was the one who was actually allowed to get out. And then you can get into the argument about if she's so important, they would have offed her too because she could burn the rest of them. But then my counter argument is she is so important that they don't want to off her because she could burn the rest of them. She might have that set up. Like she is part of the group and she just can no longer be a front playing power player. She just has to sit in the background on her little end of the cabal. And, you know, it sucks because she'd like to rabble-rouse a little bit more, but she really can't.
Okay. No, I had thought that was all leading toward you believed he did commit suicide and somehow was going to disprove that. And I was really curious how it ended up there, but it doesn't. And I think it's a...
Someone could have tossed him the rope and been like, we could do this ourselves. So, you know, but
I feel like that's still someone killing him. I still feel like that's not quite suicide.
I wouldn't call that a suicide.
No, I like the theory. I do want to express that theory is explicitly the view of Doug, not me. If you hear that theory and it resonates with you and you feel the need to go do something about it, that was not Tom. That was Doug.
Hey, Tom, there was just some, I think I saw a masked guy and he suddenly shook his head and turned around and walked out your door. He doesn't know where I am.
Stupid Zoom background. Oh, you know what? Your address is still sitting out.
It would be like the U.S. Postal Service to go to the wrong house.
Yeah.
And that is the thing, by the way. This is not me going like, just kidding, CIA. It's more just like, I actually have no founding for this. It's sort of the Scott Adams, you know, the Dilbert guy. He likes to say that the most entertaining outcome is the one most likely to happen in our simulated universe. To me, that's the most entertaining outcome, is that she's not just not the front guy. She was actually the guy, proverbially, and that whole thing was a sham. But I just think that would be the most fun. That would be the best movie.
That would be the best movie. Okay, that was a fun theory. I like that.
Thank you.
So Epstein didn't kill himself. I like that. Doug had a sharp theory. I like that.
Don't tell anybody.
We've incriminated ourselves in future homicides and...
Technically just myself. I haven't found anything in the backyard yet, though.
No.
This guy was like a CPA, though, so I just feel like he wouldn't have had the guts to do it.
That's a good cover right there. A nice, quiet, white-collar job.
Right.
What was the toy box killer? Wasn't he like a finance guy? I don't remember. Now I got to look that up.
I don't know.
Oh, man. If you want to see sadism, I think I've mentioned this guy before. Gosh, he was something else. David Parker Ray. He was something awful.
I recognize the name. I should research these guys more just because of his fast name. But what did he do again?
So he was a serial killer, and he had this like soundproofed semi-trailer that he called his toy box. I listen to a lot of podcasts about serial killers, and I've read lots of books about them. It's sort of a sick obsession of mine. I'm using them as the foundation for an antagonist in a story I'm working on.
That's it.
There's a reason that I went to college for psychology, and I'm just so fascinated by it. And serial killers, I just absolutely...
If someone ever wanted to just detain you, they'd be like, he was listening to all the serial killers.
Yep, they've got enough. I mean, anybody who knows me would be like, man, that guy would make a damn good serial killer. Let's go get him, because he's probably, you know... But what he would do, if you go and you listen to his trials, or you probably just do a search and find him, he would drug and kidnap women, and then they would literally wake up in this trailer. And I guess I need to be careful what I say so that people aren't like shutting us down for inappropriate language. You know, the R word is a bad word. They would wake up in a trailer, and actually, it's not on YouTube, but why care? They would wake up in a trailer, and there would be literally...
It could be, though, later.
Yeah, maybe. There would be a cassette player in front of them, and they would be drugged and bound, tied hand and foot, but they could reach out and push play, and there'd be a note on it that said just push play, and they would push play on the tape cassette player, and it was kind of like from Saw. There would be a pre-recorded message on this cassette, and it would be him explaining to them, yes, I've drugged you, I've abducted you, you're mine now, this is what I'm going to do to you. And he would give them explicit details of the rape and the torture and what he had done to previous girls. I mean, and it was so bad and so graphic. If you listen to this cassette recording they played at his trial, it's literally the most shocking, horrific thing I've ever heard of any serial killer ever. It's just the worst. Part of the cassette tape, when you listen to it, he's like, if you look in front of you, you'll notice a wooden device with straps and fasteners. I'm going to strap you down to that device. And you'll notice that when you're in that strap to that device, it's going to have you in the bent over position on your hands and knees. I've smeared your backside, your genitals, your anus with dog pheromones, and I'm going to bring my male dogs in one at a time, and they're going to rape you viciously over and over. He describes the dog penises. He describes the size, how it usually goes for previous girls. He is graphic, and it is honestly the most horrifying thing I've ever listened to. So if you want something really disturbing that will change the way you look at what human beings unfortunately are capable of, David Parker Ray, he was the toy box killer, I think is what he called himself. what we've called him, he kept ridiculous notes on all these women, and you can hear the cassette tapes that they played at his trial. It's horrible. It's
don't wait, order now while supplies last. Like,
yeah, t-shirts coming next month.
Right, Jesus. I had heard about the guy, but I didn't realize that the cassette tapes were out there. I wasn't exactly looking for them. But you hear stuff like that, and I sit there and I think, convince me there's not a demon in there.
Yeah. Yep.
Like inside him, or that he's just sell himself over to something like that. I just.
Yeah. And the thing about him that was honestly some of the sickest elements about the whole thing was that he had a wife, and his wife would help him. She would take a hand in all this, and she'd be very involved in the torturing and the kidnapping. And he had two daughters. I know for me, having daughters changes the way I look at things a lot. When I was a young man, I was that scandalous male bachelor who was like, yeah, I'm just going to go out and try to hit everything I could hit. I just want to be with every woman in Savannah was my goal at one point. Like, I'm going to sleep with all of them. And I was just a scandalous bachelor dog. And I have daughters now. I'm like, oh, wow. Like, that changes my perspective on things a little bit. This guy had two daughters, and it was like six women a year. And I think they were teenagers or early 20s. They were young. There was a pretty good chance some of these were his daughter's ages by the end, because he got away with this for a long time.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you can do that unless there's something truly evil inside of you. I don't know how something doesn't eventually click that says, oh, this is fucked up. I got to stop.
Well, I have an answer for you, at least a cockamamie answer.
Yeah.
So the first answer is demon, possession, deal with the devil, whatever. You're asking for help from the wrong team. It could just be, I mean, obviously some version of insanity, but also just literal pure narcissism gone bad. Yeah. I remember mentioning at one point that it's only gotten stronger, that I believe that all evil comes from narcissism / selfishness. If it's not actual literal pure, like from the devil evil. And that doesn't initially compute on the surface, but when you think about it, every single bad thing that is ever done is because the bad person doing it wanted X more than they cared about the other person's stuff, the other person's life. I mean, contract killing is not really a big moral leap for people nowadays, now that we've known more about it. I mean, if you don't know how much it costs to ask someone else to go end somebody's life for you, it's cheap. You can buy that new arcade game. You can buy the new Galaga arcade game for your basement, or you can have your worst enemy offed $3,000. And admittedly, you get what you pay for. I mean, if you're paying that price, you're getting some like local gangbanger or something like that who may not have the most refined methods. You know, you want to get a real professional like Timothy Oliphant. You're probably going to get to five figures, at least.
Timothy Oliphant. I don't know why, but I like that guy so much.
Yes. But so that's out there, and that's comparatively really pretty cheap for what a normal, like, righteous-ish person would think. So it's got to be narcissism. Like, to him, he got his jollies from this. And he can just very easily say, well, it's not my daughters. Maybe my daughters are lucky they're my daughters because they're not a target for me. When you get really, truly 100%, I want this and nothing else matters, selfishness, you can make up any reason for doing it. And you know what? His wife helping him? Yeah, that's a little bit fucked up. But again, you're thinking like a moral, rational person. You're not thinking like an insane person. And birds of a feather, baby. If this guy is this insane and someone was married to him more than 5 months, guess what? She's probably a little bit psycho too. If you think about it, it's really quite lovely. I mean, they're just supporting each other in their marriage. They're doing activities together.
They found ways to keep the marriage alive and fresh.
If you've ever gone on a date to like an axe throwing place, just imagine there's a person there and you're right there. It's just one little change. That's wow. It.
That's pretty dark. And I'm thinking of the axe throwing trip I did with my friends in Vegas. And now I'm looking at that in a whole different light. Thanks, Doug.
You're welcome. So when I get detained, they have plenty on me too now. Oh, yeah. He said he wished this was a person. I did not say that.
Maybe we could be cellmates. I will tell you all about the guy that died in there before we moved in. Don't worry. I'll let you know. I had a dream.
Yeah. And plot twist, it's you. I think that's why everybody is so fascinated with serial killers, though, because it's so detached. Normal people don't get there. They don't ever psychologically get there. So it's kind of like fanciful that someone else could even do that. But it's also engaging because if all the serial killers were speaking in tongues and running around without pants on and stuff like that, that is not as interesting. A pure insane person is not that interesting. The cold, calculated person who does this, there is something relatable about them. They have logic. They have opinions. Some of them do have like legit feelings. They have families. Like, it's not just the fear of my next door neighbor could be that person. It's also because there is some commonality there. People don't want to think about it this way, but there is some relatability there. Every time you sat there and you thought, I could walk out of the store with this, would anyone really catch me? I'm like, maybe. Most of us don't do it because of something, for fear of getting caught at the very minimum. But these people just took that and literally ran with it, pun intended. They just took it on steroids. They just said, I want that, and just that happened to be a human.
Yeah.
And that's it.
It's the banality of evil that makes it so intriguing. I think that's what makes the good. That's
it's unapologetic.
Makes the good antagonist. It's just so common. It could be anybody. There was a statistic I heard in a podcast a couple months ago, and I wish I knew what it was, but it's something along the lines of the average human being living in America, unless you're living in a really low population area, and I forget what they use as statistic, but the average human being in America over the course of their lifetime will walk past within arm's distance something like 6 or 7 serial killers in their lifetime. And when you think about that, sure, your lifetime, whatever, but that's just, man.
Yeah, just, like you never know. You literally brush past someone who was like holding someone in their little carrier right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, but see, that's average. So like New Yorkers have to be.
Yeah. You like every other person in New York is clearly.
You people in New York, you're up to like 30 already.
Yep.
One of them's probably at your wedding next month.
Yeah, you might be married to one and you don't know it. If you live in New York and you're married, you live there and you're married to a Red Sox fan, you need to watch out for that person.
Well, obviously. Well, Red Sox fans are just sad.
I'm not sad.
Look at you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm interested in what you think about all evil coming from selfishness, and because I'm inclined to agree that selfishness is typically the biggest problem. And narcissism, you pointed out. I think another place a lot of this comes from.
They're the same coin in a way. Narcissism is just, well, okay, they are different. Narcissism is never good.
Right.
Narcissism is only bad. Selfishness can be good, but narcissism is born out of selfishness. You know, not all rectangular squares, the way I view that. So
I can get on board with that.
I say selfishness because that's colloquially easier to, it's usually brings a negative connotation. And narcissism, people think of like looking at yourself in a mirror, like Narcissus.
I think a lot of it, especially with serial killers and people who commit these really awful, especially the more sadistic crimes, a lot of it, I think, comes from trauma and a developmental age. Like, I think there's something there where it's not necessarily narcissism. There is I think trauma leads to this sort of self-loathing in weird ways that they then are like always at arms with and always trying to battle. And they choose a really obviously callous and awful way to do it. But a lot of them, most serial killers that you read about, were sexually abused as a child or had some sort of abnormal sexual dysfunctional upraising that happens in their childhood. That's a very common denominator with almost all of them. And I think the trauma probably plays a role in this. It's like the analogy about, you know, you drop two different beer bottles, they both hit the ground and they both break, but one of them just shatters and one of them becomes the sharp-edged weapon that can be used in a bar fight. How you break is important. And I think a lot of these guys are getting broken in ways that turns them into weapons. I don't know. The psychologist in me really, like I said, I'm really fascinated with all this. And abnormal psychology really, really gets me. I'm a big fan of Jung and everything he kind of posits. And I'll go ahead and risk losing a couple of our listeners at this point. But the parts of Jungism that Jordan Peterson espouses, I'm actually a big, big fan of. And I think a lot of that comes down to this. You know, you have to sort of dip your toes in the water of the bad things you can do and learn what you're capable of doing that's bad before you can actually be good. You have to know what you're capable of, and then you have to choose to do right, knowing what you could do otherwise, in order to really be a good person. And some people, I think, dip their toes in that water and they don't make the choice to do the right thing, whether they're not capable of it because of a psychological break or there's something else going on. That's the shadow. You have to know the shadow in order to conquer it. And if you don't conquer it, then it's going to conquer you. And it's going to manifest things in your actions, in your life, in your behaviors in really weird ways. And those are going to progressively get stronger and stronger and worse if you don't have a way to deal with it. And that's like the whole basis of the novel I'm working on right now. So we get a little bit of a lecture there.
Anyway.
A nice light topic as we keep it to right. 1 hour and
I
fail.
I know. You do make a good point there. I mean, my rationalization of that, if you will, is that yes, trauma is a big indicator or a big part of a lot of these things, but the trauma still doesn't make your choices for you. And I mean, why are most serial killers men? We're not going to sit here and pretend that there aren't plenty of female trauma victims, especially when they're young. And they don't do this. There are a couple of female serial killers. You are really carrying the team, carrying the water. Good job. Keep it up, but not really.
I think that's largely biological, though. The trauma, I think, is part of it. Right. I'm not saying trauma is the entire thing. I'm saying trauma is a part of it.
Between the two of us, between any two people on Earth, you could have a never-ending, until we're dead, debate about nature versus nurture. My uncle used to say, because my uncle had five kids, so my five cousins, and he used to say, you still teach them stuff. You're still raising them. Like, they still reflect you, but to a degree, they all come prepackaged. And I get it now. Having three kids, we are the same parents in the same house, same lessons. And our kids are already wildly different because there is just something prepackaged there. And I would say trauma could be like a catalyst or a force multiplier. It's one of the many switches that leads that way. But being traumatized doesn't automatically make you a serial killer. And correct. Like you said, some of it is just how you break. And that's a really good analogy to express that. But at the end of the day, it's still like kind of a narcissist, selfish thing, because if you're so damaged that, what'd you say? It wasn't like the inferiority complex or the lack in confidence.
No,
it's like
a self-loathing and your effort, the way you're trying to conquer it is by dumping it out on other people and destroying something else.
You self-loathe so much that you want to make other people feel lower than you. You want to feel power over them. And all these guys talk about it. It's just as much a power trip as it is anything else.
Yeah.
So yes, they hate themselves, but by golly, some of the most narcissistic, selfish people absolutely fucking hate themselves. And that's part of the reason why they are that way, because they are trying to desperately not hate themselves, or they are trying to, at the very least, misery loves company, drag everyone down with them. So self-loathing doesn't sound like narcissism, doesn't sound like selfishness, but I would contend that's still the driving force, because they're trying to counteract that self-loathing on some weird base level. And we do stuff like this all the time. Like, you see someone who has stupid sunglasses, in the car that just cut you off, and you're like, that motherfucker isn't even paying attention. Who even buys sunglasses like that? You know, you look like a ladybug, right, bro? What are you doing? There's a small part of you that was just like, oh, I got cut off. Well, fuck him then. You know what? Yeah. He's stupid. I'm better than him. He needs to cut me off to feel better about himself. Therefore, I am more important now. I think it's there. It dictates a lot of what we do every day. And sometimes it just goes really south.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the kind of the driver behind everything. Good moral acts are basically constantly saying, no, not about me this time.
And I like
obviously
that.
I've just figured out the whole everything. So you're welcome.
Yeah. Everyone's welcome. World
peace. Excuse me while I go struggle with this daily, constantly for the rest of my life.
Doug just gave himself a complex, but he did pave the road to world peace and actual humanitarian humanism, a humanistic world for all of you.
It is up to all seven of you to go out there.
I'm sure we're up to 8.5 by now.
Right.
I've got a one-eared army friend who's probably tuning in.
Well, the Jordan Peterson thing is funny. It is funny how just so many of us hitch onto that do what we're told mentality, because I was a fan of Jordan Peterson, and then a bunch of people were like, fuck him. And then I at least kind of did that, like, I still like him, but should I not like him? You at least have that little flash of maybe I shouldn't, and that's why people badmouth who they don't like, because they just want to muddy the waters a little bit. And then he did say a few things, so I'm like, Ooh, yeah, I'm not. No, I'm not going that far with you, buddy.
But that's okay. You don't have to all in on every single thing a person thinks or says in order to appreciate.
You think some I'm going to say things, everything you know? You agree with all the freaking time? Like,
right. You're a Cleveland fan. There's no possible way we could ever be 100% together on everything. I mean, come on. Aside from your adoration for Brady, there's nothing we could possibly get along and be 100% together on.
You want to talk about trauma? But Jordan Peterson did say two things that I think, if you didn't know that Jordan Peterson said them, you would at least have to think there's something there. So I think that they're worth mentioning, because he was the one, I think, who said, a good man is not a powerless man.
Yes.
A good man is a very dangerous man who keeps that under control. And it's kind of like what you said about you have to know your shadow to be good. If you couldn't do anything to stop the badness, then you're not really a good man, because you're just a pushover. You're a roadblock and nothing more. And then
a person in a coma. Just think of a person who's in a coma and is unable to think or act or do anything. They're incapable of doing anything bad. Does that necessarily make them a good person? You know.
No. But then he also said something like, if you think powerful men are neat or get stuff done, just wait until you see what weak men can do. When you have enough people just following and not questioning, it's cliche, but that's how you get to those kind of fascist level, totalitarian level states, is you have enough people not saying no. And then they go along with it because that's what you're supposed to do.
The first quote that you put out there is very much the one that espouses a lot of the positions that I believe in. And I mean, I have to. I've been trained because of my background that I have to believe in that. You read, On Killing? On Combat? I can't remember which of those books it was. But one of those books, it's something I read when I first became a police officer. And he talks about how law enforcement officers, the world wants us to be kind and polite and gentlemanly in a way as much as we can. And they get upset when we have to commit acts of violence or we have to talk brashly to them. But the truth of the matter is you have to be, because what you're out there combating is as a law enforcement officer, as a soldier, as anyone who's dealing with something we're killing is potentially on the table. You're dealing with a bunch of wolves. You're dealing with a bunch of people who will kill you if they want to kill you, if they feel the need to kill you. Their willingness to kill you exists. There's not a question about it. There are people who are capable and ready and willing, if they're given the opportunity, to end your life. And what do you use to fight wolves? You don't use a gentleman goat herder. You don't use a sheep herder with a stick. You get a sheepdog. You get a creature that's capable of doing combat with the wolves, but chooses not to use that capability to harm the sheep, and chooses not to use that capability to harm people, but instead uses that capability to do violence, to do hard things, to brave death in order to protect. That's what you need. And I feel like that's a lot of it comes from my time serving military and law enforcement and being exposed to that philosophy. I think a lot of why I like Jordan Peterson in that quote, and maybe even Young in certain ways, comes from the fact that I lived that, and I believe it's true based on experience. The officers that went out there and did mean to do well and meant to do good things and meant to be good for their community and just wanted to make a change and be someone who helps people, but did not have any fight in them, they were the ones that got out there and got seriously injured and put other officers in danger, sometimes put victims back into danger because they weren't able to do what they needed to restrain someone or to disarm someone. And that person would shake free and get back at a victim right in front of you and hurt them even worse in front of you. The people who weren't sheepdogs caused more harm than they did good. And most of them did not last in the field. We saw it in the army too. There's a gentleman in Iraq. The Bedouin tents we were sleeping in were meant to house like 100 people or 110 people. And I think we had 240 in the one that I was in before we crossed over when we were still in Kuwait. So it was crowded.
That wouldn't pass fire inspection.
No, would not have passed fire inspection. It was a little crowded. And there was one guy, and I don't want to put his name out there, but he was always a little bit different. We all thought of him as a little bit off. You know, it's an awful way to think about it. But he was just one of those guys that did things a little differently and said things that caught you as a little strange on a regular basis. And as we started talking more and more about, you know, we're going to cross the border, we're going to roll out, this is what's going to happen. There are going to be convoys that are going this far, and we're going to cross this pier and take this, and this is our path. And as we started to get information about it, he started to get really withdrawn and really mumbly and started doing all these little things that, in hindsight, people should have been watching for. And then one night was literally lying in his cot with his rifle locked and loaded, tucked against his chest. He was hugging it in both arms. And he was just rolling back and forth in his cot. There's not a lot of room to roll back and forth in those army cots. But he was rocking back and forth, cradling his firearm and saying some really disturbing things. He broke at the thought of going over and doing this. And had he been in any truck that crossed that border, I really hate to think what would have happened. Fortunately, you know, it was seen and it was taken care of. And he was not sent into the hot zones. But you see people who aren't willing to do that, who aren't capable of violence, who've never touched their toes in that water and never kind of explored what they're capable of. And when that moment comes, they're not capable of it. And it turns out that, I don't know, maybe you're a good person, but you're going to get people hurt. You're going to get people killed. You're going to die yourself. Bad things are going to happen from you being involved. So yeah, that first quote, the first one is the one that really, really resonates with me. The second one makes a lot of sense too. But I have to think much harder to make that one work, whereas the first one just resonates. So I'm going to go with a simple brain bath tonight on a day where I'm dehydrated and not feeling well, and I've already been talking too much.
Okay, so if you don't like Jordan Peterson, there are other quotes by obviously other very likable people that that resonate the same. I mean, that what was the... We sleep soundly in our beds because there are some very hard men that are willing to do harm to others out there protecting us or whatever. Like that's roughly the quote. We
sleep soundly because,
yeah. I could be wrong on this. It wasn't like that Mad Dog Mattis guy that said, have a plan to kill everyone you meet. And that's a little bit more crass.
That's a little aggressive, but
it is aggressive. But the point is that you have to always be on guard. And it's more of a military thing. I think it was a Marine thing. My two favorite quotes, and one of them, it's always cited as Abraham Lincoln, but I think it was like a paraphrase from someone else who was talking about him, but it was, any man can handle adversity. If you really want to test a man's character, give him power.
Yes.
That's one of my favorite quotes too. And then my absolute favorite quote, I want to say it was Bertrand Russell or George Bernard Shaw. I know those are obviously really different. I think it's George Bernard Shaw.
Yeah. It's six of one, half a dozen of the other.
Yeah. Robert Frost. We're all over the place.
Tonight. Robert Frost, Yates, you know.
Inside Out, thing. Jeffrey Epstein, Jordan Peterson.
You know, the beast slumbers, you know, whatever. It's fine.
We said Tom Brady once. This is gonna
be, yeah, it's fine. This is gonna the be Falcon the is spinning slowly in the gyre. It's okay.
But anyway, that quote is power does not corrupt men. Fools, however, when in a position of power, corrupt power.
Interesting.
And I always like that one because power is power. It's just a thing. Power doesn't corrupt you. You're just, if you're corrupt, you're more likely to go for power. Plain and simple.
I Googled the quote because I was upset I didn't know the exact words because it's one that I've used 100 times in my life. And it's, we sleep soundly in our beds because rough men stand ready in the night to visit violence on those who would do us harm.
Yeah, that sounds better than what I said.
No, I like the way you said it. It was good.
You mean all rambly and stuff?
It was in the moment. It was authentic. I like it. I like authentic stuff.
I'm being true to myself.
There you go. Yep, we'll go with that.
Yeah, I just felt dirty saying that about myself, so you're welcome.
All right, on that happy note, should we wrap this up?
I'm going to make a Two Dads Talking bingo card.
Ooh, and that's a good idea.
And it's going to have, whenever you hear Tom or Doug say one of these things.
Yep.
You know, and then somehow you just email us and say, bingo. And we'll be like, what the fuck? I just got this weird random email on Tuesday.
Well, once we get the Facebook group going, we can give people shout outs and we can, once we start not just dumping money into this thing, we can send merchandise. Maybe we'll have some kind of giveaway, you know? Yeah. Father buds, dad buds. I can feel my nipples now that you say that.
Nipples. One of mine is, so there, listening to these, editing them, I'm like, holy shit, I say that a lot, so I take it out whenever I can, but sometimes you just can't get rid of them.
Yep, that's interesting. I'm gonna start a counter now. Should we do dad jokes?
Oh yeah, man, almost got away from one. Tom, why should you never fart in an Apple store?
Feels like one that I should figure out.
You should figure it out. I hope you're upset with yourself after this.
I probably will be. All right, I'm going to blame dehydration one more time. I don't know. Give it to me. Why shouldn't you fart in an Apple store?
Because they don't have windows.
That's actually really good. I think that might be your best one so far. I really do. That was excellent. Well, I was thinking completely the wrong way. Yep. Okay. I like it. Good, good.
Thank you.
I'm going with the Christmas theme because we're now in the Christmas spirit. What do Christmas trees and post-vasectomy men have in common?
What the shit?
That's my favorite reaction yet.
End recording. just don't even get there. For some reason, I feel like I should get this one.
I've already said that tonight, so someone's already got that on their bingo card. You can't check it twice. Sorry.
I know. Even if you're naughty or nice, check it twice. Naughty or nice.
Nope.
Yeah? Okay, come on.
I've already said it, so your bingo card is already stamped.
But you made the Santa reference. Making a list, checking it twice.
Yeah, but that was before we started recording, I think. No one else heard the prostitute joke.
You said it just now.
Oh, okay.
You said check it twice for
dehydration. Dehydration. Stop. Dehydration.
Stop it. It's what do Christmas trees and post-vasectomy men have in common?
Yes, it is.
What is it, Tom? Just give me the punchline. Give it to me, Tom. Give it to
they
me.
They both have decorative balls. I got the full shoulder shrug collapse over there.
And I'm looking off to the right, questioning all my life choices right now. One of your best ones as well.
Thank you, sir.
When there's a part of you that's like, why do I even talk to this person? Good dad joke.
Unless your name is Matt Rife, and I guess that's a different situation right now.
Do I have to bleep that out now?
No, I think you're all right. We've not expressed an opinion on the matter. I think we're still relatively safe. I'm more worried about a federal agent or someone from the CIA sneaking into my house and smothering me with a pillow based on our other topics of conversation this evening than I am anything there.
We'd have to have a pretty wide breadth of reach to have someone actually give a crap about us, considering what other people are out there espousing on the internet.
I think it depends on how accurate your theory is.
Yeah,
maybe. If you hit that nail right on the head, then someone's probably going to come hit us in the head.
Probably. I don't know. I mean, I have no problem saying also, like, it's just a theory. Like, I don't have any proof behind any of it. If
I insist you say that, actually.
Well, I mean, like, not to really poke the bear more, but if I actually did have any proof, I would not be saying it here. I can promise you that. All right.
On that note.
On Tom's happy note.
On that happy note, now that we're ending with decorative balls and CIA hits, thank you for listening. Please, wherever you found us, as Doug would like to say if I wasn't cutting him off right now, like us, subscribe us, leave comments, give us feedback. Tell us what you want us to talk about. Tell us what you don't want us to talk about. And if Doug goes missing and you happen to know where he is, please let me know, because I'm going to be worried by the time we release this episode. Give us the feedback. Help us spread the show. Help us do some things. Help us grow a little bit. I had
to ask my wife from the lab back first.
That's fair. Thank you for listening. We appreciate it. Talk to you next week.
Bye, guys.